We're week two with Natasha Hawker, the author of, and I should have it in front of me, From Hire to Fire and Everything in Between. And we've had a great discussion in the first week. We're going to continue on. And I think a good place to start this week is, and I'm sure you hate to do it or people hate to be involved in it, but is segmenting the gens, you know, the Gen Y, the Gen this, the Gen X, the, you know, the millennials. Where are we really at with all of that? I mean, is it still ringing true? Is it a naming convention that actually does all of us a disservice? Mm. Where are we up to there?
Look, I think there's a whole lot of things. As an interesting comment, I think we talked a lot more about Gen Y than we're talking about Gen Zs. And I wonder whether that was just because there was such a difference between Gen X and Gen Y. Having said that, diversity is absolutely key, and they have proven time and time again where workforces have very diverse workforces, whether it be gender, whether it be sex, whether it be religion, whether it be Gen Y, Gen Z, baby boomers, they have more success, you know, because you've got different minds. So I think the segmenting absolutely happens. I think as business owners, we need to be aware of the different types of traits for each of those segments and actually use them to our advantage. So if we talk about Gen Y, Gen Y are all about the experience. A lot of them saw their parents lose their jobs, so they don't see a role for life. Like my grandfather worked at the BHP from the day he started till the day he got his gold watch and retired. That doesn't exist anymore. And Gen Y, even if it did, aren't interested. They're all about filling their bag with skills. So if you want to retain Gen Y, you've got to keep skilling them. So if you haven't got a great training budget, that's an issue. The other thing Gen Y wants, 65% of Gen Y want to be entrepreneurs. So if you're hiring a lot of Gen Ys, one of the great ways you can retain them is actually mentor them or train them or teach them a little bit about how you've been so successful. And so I think it's really important for business owners to be aware of the differences, but don't focus on them and make sure that, you know, another example of using the advantage of a Gen Y is they have fabulous IT skills and social media skills. They can do stuff that, you know, you just can't imagine. I've got a girlfriend actually whose daughter took a gap year, and she's 19. She's a bright kid. She's deferred uni. And she went in, and I don't like this term, but that's what they were advertising as a Girl Friday. Literally to turn up, do a bit of reception, do a coffee and tea making. She is running the place now. It's an organization. It's a mail order business, I think, with 65 people. They cannot get enough of her because she's gone in. She's got great initiative. She can see things. She fixes it. She can do stuff that the business owner doesn't know how to do in terms of social media. So she's created her own job, and he may get it for 2 years. He may get it for a little bit more, but, you know, make the most of the time you've got and maybe give them a way out to come back. So one of the things with our younger employees is they want to go and travel. So maybe consider they're all going to go and want to do Europe for 6 months. Ask them to come back. Ask them to come and see you first before they go anywhere else. They'll be more wise after they've traveled, and you get back that knowledge rather than losing that company knowledge to your competitors or to elsewhere in the market.
Mm. So then at the other end of the scale, retiring or those that are hitting 65 or whatever age that may be, as we get to live older and older, what's your take? What's your experience of those that are now well into their 60s and maybe even 70s and working, and what's happening to that, generation?
I actually studied this, as part of my first qualification when I was at TAFE before I went to uni. And at that time, there was a forced retirement age. And so we did this whole study, and there was Kerry Chikorovsky, I think was a politician at the time, that was responsible for it. So I did a whole thesis on, you know, what were going to be the impacts of no longer having forced retirement. And I found it fascinating at the time. Mature age workers are a goldmine of talent. The vast majority of them want to work much longer, have to work much longer. The preconceived ideas that they're adverse to training or they're stuck in their ways wasn't what we found. I think a lot of people will be working longer, and I think we're actually going to need them in the market because we don't have the skills that we're going to need. But I would also, you know, some people want to transition out to retire, but let's not lose them entirely. Let's get smarter about how we exit people from our organization, because often they're walking out the door with 25 years of knowledge of your business sometimes if they've been with you that long. So transition them slowly out. Consider them in a mentoring role. That's a fabulous way to use their wealth of experience and their knowledge. And I think it's really important that we have conversations with our more mature workforce as they're coming up to retirement age, because you're preconceived idea that they're definitely going to want to travel around Australia in a motorhome for the next 10 years may not be what it's at for them. So start to have those conversations early and not make them a scary thing, because I think people avoid them and then suddenly it's retirement. And for these people, they need to have preparation to transition out. I've got a friend who's just finishing up her career. She's a very successful career, but her career has been her life now. And so she doesn't have any hobbies to go out and do stuff with now. So she will probably transition on a part-time basis. She'll probably come and work for me, which would be fabulous. I'd have her, you know, next week if I could, because she's got great skills and I can throw her at anything. So I think it's around trying to have those conversations early, not assuming everyone's going to move out, and talk to them about how they'd like to transition. What would they like to do? How can you keep them in the business? You might have them as an advisory board member, just because they know how things tick at your organization and you don't want to lose them.
It's interesting. So a curiosity then, in your research for when you were doing that that work about retirement, did it ever come up on how the age of 65 was?
It was largely because of, from memory, it was largely because of when we die. So it was the mortality rate, or the age, the average age that people died was younger then. So at 65, I think the average age from memory was in your early 70s, and there's always been a difference. Men have typically...
I might challenge you.
Yeah, and I'm happy to be challenged. It's a long time ago.
I think, and I could be wrong, but I think this is how it goes, and it's good for everyone who's listening to understand this, because it does shed some light onto, you know, why we use that as a... almost like as a given. In 1870 or 1870s, there was Kaiser Wilhelm, who was the leader of Germany, had a couple of or three or four old cronies in his parliament that were in their 70s, and he couldn't get a lot of bills through the parliament. And so what he did was he decided to put this law in to say, when you hit 65, you've got to retire. And so all of these guys had to leave Parliament. Now, the average age, the average life expectancy back in the 1870s was about 37 or 38. And so to come up with this number and for it to then stick, should it actually have come from there? And I'm sure someone who's listening or can correct me or just give us the more details. I have done a little bit of research on Google and it is there in the background. Maybe not to the simplistic form of that, but that would be like today, where our average life expectancy is 80, to say you've got to retire at 150. I mean, everyone that heard that back then would have gone, yeah, well, what's the, you know, that's a number that no one, you know, rarely achieves, or those that live in an affluent world back then would have achieved that because they would have had good nutrition and good care. So it's really, really odd. Therefore, what is that number anyway? It's just irrelevant. So when are you going to work? You're going to work to whenever you feel like you want to stop, and then at that point, and that's a, I think that's what we all need to really understand. And therefore, if that's not your retirement age, but it's just you decide when you want to stop and or how you want to kind of organize your life in terms of work, in terms of giving back, in terms of you know, because work does, for many of us, nourish us. So I think it's really important just for people to understand that it's not the end, and who cares about whatever, you know, where history's at. And everything is changing. So one question I'd like, we've kind of not ignored or neglected, the reason you're here is because you've written a book, but also we're really going to diving into your background, into your thoughts and the way you see the world. Is there anything in here, your book From Hire to Fire, that that is worth just kind of highlighting and shining a spotlight on for those that are listening?
Yeah, the reason I wrote the book was I felt that there are a lot of business owners who, like we were talking about just then, are passionate about their business. They love their business. They went into business because they're passionate about books or real estate or baking or whatever it happens to be. But generally what happens with that is for many businesses, they get employees, and their employees are a sense of enormous frustration. They often keep them awake at night. The two things they say every year, MYOB does a study, keeps them awake at night, is cash flow and employees. And I think what I saw was there was a lot of opportunity to help business owners get this stuff right and actually make these employees something that they were proud of and that they enjoyed rather than a source of frustration. So that was why I wrote the book. It was around trying to help business owners get this stuff right, because there are enormous fines, Tony. You know, if you breach the Fair Work Act, and it can be as simple as not having a copy of the Modern Award where your team know it, where it is, it might be in the kitchen or in your intranet, that could be a fine of up to $63,000 just for not having that. You know, for not consulting on major workplace change, that can be a fine of up to $63,000. For firing someone that's a pain in the backside, that everyone knows is a pain in the backside, but you just haven't followed due process, that could be up to 6 months' salary and or reinstatement. And I think there was a lot of, when I talked to business owners, they had a lot of misconceptions. You know, they'd go, oh, it's three strikes and you're out. I've given him his two verbal and his one written, I'm okay. And it's like, well, that went out on the 1st of January 2010. You know, you need to get this right. And who do you think turns up more at Fair Work for unfair dismissal? Small business owners, because they don't have HR to support them. So I want to get aim is to get that book into every single small to medium business owner's hands in Australia, because I can guarantee it'll at least save them a $63,000 fine if they got caught. And it might help them get their business more profitable and more productive and actually enjoy their business a lot more. So it's written in a way that they can read end to end, or they can just go, oh, I've got to have one of those difficult conversations. I'm going to that page to remind me what I can and can't say and how I need to document it and how I need to ask them if they will recommend they have a support person with them. So it's meant to be a guidebook and a great way to help business owners get what they want and deserve out of their business.
Mm, congratulations.
Thank you.
Must be everyone that's listening is going, I've got to get one of these. So you've done a new and revised second edition. Mm. When did that come out?
November last year.
So it's yeah, really
it's
fresh.
It's really fresh. And the reality is I will have to keep doing new versions because the legislation changes. An example being domestic leave violence. Many of your listeners may not know, but in Australia on the 1st of August last year, the government brought in that any employee is entitled to up to 5 days of unpaid domestic violence leave to attend to their circumstances, because they've proven it costs them something like $18,000 financially and takes them up to 2 weeks to leave a destructive relationship. And we want to do more. And what I think we've started to see is corporates are now offering that as paid leave, not because they have to, but because they realize we have an issue in Australia with, I think the statistic is something like one woman every week is murdered or killed by her former or current partner. So we need to take our share of that and solving what is a big problem in Australia. So I will need to keep doing updates, and that keeps it fresh. And I think the world is evolving all the time, and we need to keep it up to date.
Mm. So given, I mean, it sounds like the beneficiaries are business owners or
managers,
team leaders, but for an employee to read it and to know what their rights are or to know how a company can be accountable, surely there's some value there too.
Yeah, and do you know what? I hadn't honestly thought of that. I've always thought about it as a manager, so I think it's a great option. And I think most business owners are trying to do the right thing. There are a few idiots out there that just want to do the wrong thing, and eventually their time catches up with them. But for many business owners, if you had an employee that read a book like that and said, hey, Tony, did you know this? I'm sure you go, I didn't know that. Let's get it fixed straight away, you know, because you've got a million things on your plate to do every day. So I do think it's a great, and if they want to be a manager, what a great read for them in terms of preparing or working out how to treat their fellow employees or call people out when they're misbehaving inappropriately, because most of the time people tend to stand back and are quiet and let that behavior get on, where if you sort of say to them, you know, this is how we want to hold ourselves to account, that will help.
Yeah, no, that's good. So I guess it's really about stimulating thinking, getting people engaged. And I've just realized that when I introduced you in the first session, then I said, oh, I need more women on the show. And as I'm talking about that, I thought, hold on a second, Bernadette Schwert has come in here as well.
Yes.
You probably realize that because you're looking at the blog and my series more than me, because what I like to do is I actually like to walk in here and sit down without thinking too much and just see where the conversation goes. And it just goes to show that you actually do need to think and you do need to realize where you're up to on the journey.
But I've got some great friends I can introduce you to.
Well, that'd
be very
great.
Interesting authors that are female.
Yeah, great. Because, look, it's about people and it's about their experience. And I think everyone's perspective, especially for those like yourself and Bernadette who are looking at businesses and helping businesses and giving them feedback and thinking about whether it's just, you just want to kind of take these moments to kind of step in and hear what they have to say, because there's just a lot of value there. So I'm sorry, Bernadette, I should have.
But I think one of the things I've seen, if you talk about an observation, is how the entrepreneurial market is changing and how many females are opting out of corporate. And I think corporate are losing a lot of talent. Because women want more flexibility and so they're going to business on their own. They may have a misconception like I did that maybe I wouldn't work quite so hard. But I think there is a huge increase in the number of female business owners is what I'm saying.
I can assure you, having gone to many e-commerce events, and when I look at the top 50 people in e-commerce and the Australian e-commerce businesses that are really going somewhere, tons of them are being led by women. And it's a great... It's a great acknowledgement of where that industry is at. But at the same time, well, hold on a second, it's the lifestyle, it's the choices, it's the other options that they did not have. They've decided to do it themselves. And in today's world where you can actually, you're much more empowered to do those things, the barrier to entry to set up an online store in some industries, I'm not saying books is actually a really high barrier to entry. But in many industries, it's actually really easy, and therefore they've gone and they just kept doing what they're doing, and it's incredibly inspiring. There's tons of them, and I think it's important for all those that are listening how those barriers are not there, and if you're thinking that they're there and they're invisible, and you see them as something that's inhibiting you, then just take a look around and all the others who have not subscribed to that kind of thinking, they've gone out and done amazing things. Mm-hmm. So when you get engaged, when your company, Employee Matters, gets engaged, is it mostly men or women, or is it both? Is it even? Does it not even? Like, are women engaging you more than men?
Actually, probably we've got more male clients, but I feel like we work better with female clients, just because I think, as a general comment, women are a bit more comfortable with, I actually don't know everything, can you help me here? They'll ask for help a bit earlier. But I would say for the most part, we've got mainly male clients, and I love men. I think they're great. But I think there's a real mix. And I think that will probably even up over time as we start to see some of those businesses of those female entrepreneurs start to mature and get to the point where they need some more support. They've got enough of a team. Statistically, people normally when they get to 57 put on a full-time HR manager. But often what we find they do is they put on a very junior bod that's a grad with a couple of years experience, and they just don't have the breadth of experience or the grey hairs that we've got to help, you know, from the transactional to the strategic HR. So how do you work out what your company strategy is and then underpin that with your people strategy? And because they're critical to your success in the majority of cases, those people are going to be fundamental to whether your business is successful or not.
And that is a great spot to end this week's session. So thank you, Natasha. We'll close up there and we'll see you in a week.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.